Accession number 20303, Reel 1.
John Goddard, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Kettrick, Yorkshire.
Which year was this?
1928.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Kettrick?
No, I didn't. The reason being, my father was in the army. And with all service personnel, you tend to get moved every 2 or 3 years. And as I recall it, being told, my family moved to York about 3 years after I was born. And then when I was seven, my father got a posting to Hong Kong. He was a sergeant, staff sergeant, the Royal Army Medical Corps, dispenser. And so we lived in Hong Kong from 1935 to 1938. And we came back when I was 10.
What was life like for a schoolboy in Hong Kong in the 30s?
Well, it was absolutely marvellous. A rickshaw used to come and take me to school in the morning, and for children, we only did a half a day schooling. This is due to the climate, and so it was quite a lovely life. And being in the army, there were different excursions laid on. We had lots of swimming and picnic parties, and it was a life of the colonial army. And for my parents, of course, there were dances and tennis events, even in the sergeant's mess. It was a good life. And as a child, the sergeant's mess had children's parties, and so it was great. And also the Chinese themselves, they loved boys, and you had employed servants quite cheaply, armoured. And even the sergeant, my father, we had an armour, and he was a lovely person, and it was a very nice life for the young boy.
What were relations like between the Chinese population and the English population?
Extremely good.
Mm-hmm. And the quality of education that you got?
Well, I don't suppose, because we were only going half a day, it was as good as the English I would have got in England, going normal school days. But when I came back, I managed to pick up. My father was stationed to Shorncliffe Camp near Folkestone, big hospital there. And I went to a little school at Sandgate. And after a year, must have been 11 plus, I managed to qualify to go to grammar school at Moorhall School, Cheriton. So I suppose I must have picked up reasonably well.
Which unit was your father in?
Royal Army Medical Corps.
Any incidents that happened to you whilst you were in Hong Kong?
Not really, other than we used to have seasonal typhoons. They used to be quite incredible. Apart from being subjected to the winds and having to batten down, you then saw the sort of wrecked ships around the harbour, which was quite startling for a child.
Any Japanese in Hong Kong then?
No, I wasn't particularly conscious of that. But then again, I wouldn't be the age to know. But there was nothing, no feelings whatsoever.
What were you doing when Chamberlain declared war on Germany?
Well, we were living at Shorncliffe then. Shorncliffe Camp, Merry Quarters. And actually on the day, on the Sunday, I remember a friend, a pal and I, we were going off just to the woods to play and pick wild flowers to bring home. And then when the sirens went about 11 o'clock, I believe it was, we ran home, not knowing what it was all about. And then when we got home, we found out war had been declared.
Did you have any reaction to it at that age?
Well, there had been a build-up, so we had been expecting it. Underneath the hospital, there was great big camping area, and the year previously, with they called up reservists, and the territorials had been living there in tents, and there'd been increased activity in Shorncliffe Army Camp with calling up reservists and the territorials and training. So in the air, it was something going on. Of course, about 10 then, 11, you knew about the Munich crisis, and you knew about Mussolini and Hitler and all this, what was in the news. So and you heard your parents talking, of course.
What happened at Shorncliffe Camp in the first few weeks of the war?
Well, my father, he was due to retire in 1938. He'd finished his 22 years engagement, because of the Munich crisis, he was told he wouldn't be able to. And my father was immediately shipped off to France as part of the British Expeditionary Force in the latter months of 1939. And my mother stayed about another 6 months at Shorncliffe, but then we moved to London. So we lived with my grandmother, in fact, at Honor Oak Park, Lewisham, South East London. And then we next saw my father when he came out of Dunkirk. He just arrived home while the Dunkirk operation was on, and he'd come straight off the train and had been sent straight home to us.
What condition was he in?
Well, he wasn't too bad, actually, but he'd been on the beaches, and he had a great friend that we knew, a Sergeant Curtin, who was single, and where they were, one sergeant had to stay behind to look after the wounded soldiers in that particular detachment. And this Sergeant Curtin, my dad's friend, said, look, you've got a wife and two children, you should go. And so, you know, it's quite an emotional thing, really. And he'd taken prisoner of war. So he survived the war.
Did your father say anything about Dunkirk to you?
No, my father, he'd been in the 1914-18 war. He had joined up, lied about his age, joined the Royal Hampshire Regiment, and went out to France in 1914. Then at some stage during the war, he transferred to the Royal Army Medical Corps. But like so many of the people who went through that experience, he never talked about his experiences.
So, were you then in any bombing of England by the German Air Force?
Yeah, oh yes. Yes, what happened then? My father then, went down, I believe it was Surrey. They had a reassembly area where they established themselves into medical units. And my father was then sent out as part of the 7th Armoured Division to North Africa, to Egypt. The 7th Armoured Division, of course, eventually became the Desert Rats. And then we stayed. Oh, by then, we had bought a house. My parents had bought a house at Forest Hill, which is very close to Honor Oak Park, where my mother lived, where my grandmother lived. And we had an Anderson shelter in the back garden. And we were there during the Battle of Britain. And the Blitz.
What are your memories of the Blitz, please?
Well, my most vivid memory of the Blitz was the night the barrage started. Because when during the Blitz, in the early weeks, you would have the anti-aircraft guns firing. In fact, we used to get out of the shelter and we could actually see German planes in the cross lights, the searchlights. But it was just sort of spasmodic firing when they got targets. And then this one particular night, well, it was like all hell being let loose. We didn't know this, but they'd shipped in lots of more anti-aircraft guns into the parks, because all the parks had barrage balloon units and anti-aircraft guns. And the first night of the barrage, well, the barrage being what it is, they just opened fire and put up a sheet of lead. And being in the shelter, you just wondered what it was. The noise was so incredible. I also can recall, Forest Hill is quite high, well, called a hill, and the night of when they set London on fire, which was a Saturday, I can remember we stood out in the garden and looked across to London, to East End, and the sky was just glowing red. Incredible.
Was that at the beginning of it?
Yes, this is, yes, this is a great. When they, well, this was after the Battle of Britain was over. The RAF had defeated the daylight attacks, and then the Germans switched to night attacks. This is when the Blitz proper started. Another thing, talking about memories. I mean, when we used to go to school in the morning, we used to get out the shelters and we'd go and wash and have something to eat, and then we used to go to school. And we used to run down the road in front of each other, looking for big bits of shrapnel. Whoever got the big bits of shrapnel from anti-aircraft shell, was the boy. And to get a nose cap was a real treasure, as we went to school. And then I had one school was bombed, Kelmurray Road School. And we moved to another school, Dalmatian Road School. And evacuation had been taking place, but for some reason, my mother and father decided I wouldn't be evacuated. But then in 19, this would be early 1941, I was evacuated to a town called Kettering in Northamptonshire. So I spent a year in Kettering.
How did that work out?
Well, the actual day we were evacuated actually made the national press. I can remember this because we got to Kettering and there was a requirement in the war that people, if they had space, were required to take in evacuees. And there were billeting officers who made sure this was done. When we got to Kettering, there were some lorries, and I think there might have been buses as well, waiting at the station. And we were put in these lorries and buses. And we were taken round Kettering. And the billeting ladies were going up to doors as we went down the road, knocking on the doors and asking people if they had any spare rooms and could they take evacuees. And the word got round this was happening, and people weren't answering their doors. And the next day in the press, it said Kettering, the town of locked doors. It actually made the national press. But I can't tell the precise month, but it would be the Colindale newspaper records. And
Did you have any difficulty finding a host family yourself?
no, actually, I was just in the lorry and the lady got out when knocked on this door, and this lady came out and had a little chat, and so I was taken in. And it was a husband and wife, Ballard their name was, very nice people. And they had a daughter. Now, what would I be? I'd be about 12 then, wouldn't I? And they had a daughter about 15. And it was very nice. They're very good to me.
Did Kettering get any bombs?
Kettering, no, didn't, no.
Was your schooling disrupted by the move?
Well, yes, it was, because what happened during the evacuation like that, the local children then went to school for half a day. Then the evacuees, who still were evacuated with their teachers, the whole school had gone, or a proportion of the school, then had the school in the afternoon. So the local children went to school in the morning. We went to school in the afternoon, so education was affected.
Coming back to Forest Hill, what was your address in Forest Hill during the Blitz?
It was 40 Trilby Road.
Was that road hit by bombs?
Yes. I can remember going out and putting sandbags on assembly bombs on the street. All our windows had gone. I mean, the whole street, I mean, the first rate, the blasts of nearby bombs. I mean, where our back garden was, the suburban back garden, the house immediately behind us was bombed, just demolished. And in our street, bombs. And of course, all the windows had gone. And what you had was all your windows were all boarded up with wood, leaving about a 2 foot piece of glass, strengthened glass, which again had like a gauze stuck on it in case that shattered. So your houses were very dark inside. But then again, one of the problems of these times was these Anderson shelters were prone to flooding. And very often after a period of rain, you would wake up and you'd put your feet out of your bunk and there would be a foot of water in the end of the shelter, rather difficult.
Were you frightened during the bombing?
No, not really, no. My mother was with me, so there were two of us, and it tended to be a bit of an adventure for boys, really. So I wasn't actually frightened. And I can remember things like London trams. You'd have a London road, and it would be normal tarmac on each side. Where the tram lines were, they ran, were set in wooden blocks, about the size of bricks. And about the width of a tram, but about 2 feet further. So they got double tram lines. And when the bombs dropped in the main roads and the tram lines, these wooden blocks were soaked in tar. And in those days, London boys, we used to have these carts with pram wheels on. We used to have races downhill, you know, piece of rope. And as a boy, you would hear a bomb had dropped somewhere in this place. And the workmen would be there preparing the tram line and throwing all these wooden blocks around. And of course, they were marvellous for fuel. And we used to dive down there and we used to collect all these wooden blocks and take them home for fuel. Yeah. And they were marvellous because they were just so covered in tar. So, and also, rebombed houses. There was all, you know, when the clearance people came along, there was all this wood put to one side. And of course, there were shortages of everything in the war, including coal shortages. So this is just one of the things we did.
How do you think public morale stood up to the bombing?
Remarkably well. I mean, there's you see it now. They're saying shop was, I don't, windows blown in, there'd be a notice saying business as usual. And this was the spirit of it all.
Were you listening to wireless at the time?
Oh, yes, you did, yes.
What type of thing?
Well, there used to be, think about the wireless, there used to be several popular radio programs. And of course, it was the only form of entertainment. One program was called Happy Drone. Harry Corrish was the compere, that was very popular. And there was Itmar, was another program. And so there was usually on the evening one or two programs, you know, family type programs you want to listen to. And of course, you all listen to the news. And especially having a father who was overseas and in the army.
Did you listen to politicians on the radio?
Only Churchill. Oh, and Lord Walton. Lord Walton was the Minister of Food, I remember. And of course, food was very, very important. And he was the man who announced whether rations were going down or not. And so I remember Lord Walton being on the radio, but mainly the highlight of the radio was when Churchill made a speech. You know, you knew he was going to make a speech, and everybody listened to that.
What effect did his speeches have?
Beg your pardon?
What effect did his speeches have?
Oh, marvellous. Although, really, you know, morale boosting. Yeah. We could do anything after listening to Churchill as a nation.
And Lord Haw Haw?
Didn't hear, no, Lord Haw Haw, I can recall. I can remember excerpts being played on the BBC, but I can't remember ever having a wavelength on the radio. Yeah.
When you came back from Kettering in 1942, presumably,
yeah.
Did you then come back to more bombing?
The main bombing effort had finished right then, and there was just spasmodic raids. So I came back to 40 Philby Road, Forest Hill, and then I went to a school just a little bit further on from Kilmorey School, which had been bombed, called Rathfirm Road School. So I suppose I walked about 2 miles to school in the morning. And, well, I was very, very fortunate because I was in the top year then, 13, 12, 13, and there was a school teacher called Mr. Halliwell. He used to teach the whole school, and he was excellent, and I managed to, you know, pull up on my education with Mr. Halliwell. Headmaster was called Mr. Peel. They were marvellous. So that was extremely good. Rathbone Road School. Actually, it was Rathbone Road School, Catford was the address. Yes.
Were you in any V weapons raids?
No, I wasn't, no. Because it was after I left school that they started. But you asked if there was any still any bombing. When I was approaching my 14th birthday, which would be 1942, October 42, my 14th birthday, so about a month before, we used to have, when you were leaving school, elementary school, they used to go in front of what was called a school board. Unless your parents knew exactly what you were going to do and going to put you in something, you went before a school board, and there'd be one or two factory managers, maybe somebody from the labour exchange, somebody from maybe different professions, and they interviewed you, and the main question was, what do you want to do when you leave school? And so I sat there, and when I was asked what I would like to do when I leave school, I said I would like to go in the Navy. And so I was 14, as I say. And so one of the ladies who was on an education committee said, the LCC has a training ship where you could get a naval training before you join the Navy. Do you think you'd be interested in that? So I said, yes, that would be very nice, you know. And my mother was with me, of course, and she gave a few details. And the training ship's called the Exmouth. And in fact, before the war, it had been actually a ship moored in the Thames off Grays. But due to wartime, the boys had been taken ashore and had been evacuated to Lydney in Gloucestershire. I then was accepted by the LCC, and I, on the 20th of January, 1943, I went to County Hall and joined up with about 15 other boys who were going to the Exmouth. And that day, lunch, very unusual in the day, there was an air raid as we were crossing London to go to Paddington Station. And in fact, that day, and when we got down to Lydney, Gloucestershire, we went to the establishment we were going to, having supper, and well, the officer that was on duty said, did you experience that air raid today? And well, we said, well, with air raid sirens going on whilst we were crossing London, he said, well, they've hit a school in London. And it was, there were about 30, 40 children killed in Lewisham. Hit and run.
Did you know the name of the school?
I've got it written down. I can't think of the name of it. Yes, but it was in Lewisham. Yeah. And that caused a great deal of difficulty, even for the Germans, hitting the school.
What did you find when you got to Exmouth?
Well, the situation was the boys and the officers were billeted with people in the town. And so your billet ladies got the normal evacuation money of 5 shillings a day, I believe it was. But the Exmouth had taken over a primary school to be our instructional establishment. They'd also taken over part of a hotel as a galley. And what had formerly been a bowling alley became our dining hall. It was only 300 yards away. So that was really our establishment. We also took over a small hall to be our band room. And it, considering the time, it worked very successfully. We had excellent officers. They were strict, but caring. You know, they looked after us, so we weren't so we didn't do anything silly. And by and large, it was quite a pleasant life. And we had very good schooling. Very good schooling. Strict schooling, mind you. The first day I had a maths lesson there. It was actually the headmaster was taking the lesson. And he gave out the books and the wrote these problems on the board, and the books actually were logarithmic tables. I'd never seen them. And of course I sat there and I didn't know what to do. And then when he collected in the work, he then called out my name, and I just jotted some things down or tried to add them up. And he called me out and said, "What's the idea? Putting in something like this." So I said, "Please, I don't know how to do them." He said, "Put out your hand." And he gave me 6 cuts of a cane. This was because I'd never heard of logarithms. This is the way it went. Yeah. So you learn pretty quickly.
How long were you there for?
I was there, I arrived there 20th of January 1943, and then you could go in the Merchant Navy, or you could take a Navy test to join the Royal Navy of the Boys Seamen. We also had an excellent band, and the boys could join the Royal Marine Band Service. A lot of them did. And other boys, they're, because the war was on, their parents said, "No, we don't want him to go to sea, too big a risk." And so you could return to just civilian life if you wanted to. But out of the boys there, about 50% joined the Navy, 30% joined the Merchant Navy, 10% joined the Royal Marine Band Service, and 10% just returned to their homes. So it was on the 4th of September 1944 that I joined the Royal Navy.
Any incidents that happened to you whilst you were at Exmouth?
Nothing really, no. So it was a pretty rigorous life. There was an open air swimming pool at Lydney, and we used to start swimming in April. And we literally had to break the ice when we went in, this sort of thing. And we were small boys, and we had these big cutters, and the oars must have been about 11 feet high, and tossing the oars, going boat pulling on a winter's day, and these great big oars, you toss them, this is where you bring them up vertically and sit with them. I mean, all this sort of thing. You know, it was quite a hard, strenuous life. Yeah. But then again, it was preparing you for a tougher life ahead.
Where would you do the rowing?
Lydney is on the River Severn, and there is a dock gate, and there was a small harbour, like a small docks at Lydney, a canal. And we used to do the pulling up and down there. Some of the boys, of course, didn't like it when they went there, and about every 6 or 7 weeks or so, we used to have some boys would make a break for it. And this was very interesting, because in those days there was a railway bridge went over the River Severn. There was an explosion with 2 tankers under it about 20 years ago, and the railway since destroyed it. But we always used to say the boys would make for the Severn Bridge, because we're on the Welsh side of the Severn, and cross over the Severn Bridge. I mean, it's a fucking great long bridge. I mean, about a mile long. And once they got across to the Bristol side, they had the chance of a home run, sort of thing. And we used to go to school in the morning, and we'd be mustered at 8 o'clock before we got marching around for our breakfast. Then the sort of word would go round, you know, "Did you hear Bunky Williams? Not here. He's made a bunk, done a bunk." And then there'd be this excitement all day long, how far he'd got, you know. And invariably, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, a policeman would turn up pushing a bike with an Exmouth boy in company. Yeah. But about 1 in 10 used to make it to London. Yeah.
Can you tell me about going to the Navy, please?
Well, the Navy, pre-war, the main naval establishment for training boys seamen was the HMS Ganges at Shotley. And when war was declared, because there were so many hostility adult ratings to be trained, Shotley was taken over for that purpose. And so they looked around for a smaller establishment to train the boys, because they still wanted boys. Because when you joined a boy, you had to serve for 12 years from the age of 18. So you joined at 15 or 16, so you were automatically in it for 14 to 15 years.